online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sundog, the podcast. It's the show where we talk about everything related to marketing plus technology. And hopefully by the end of today's show, you'll be able to take something away that'll help improve your company's bottom line. I'm Lon Keller, senior editor here at Sundog Studios, and we have a great panel joining us today. We're going to start with our marketing and social intern, Cassie Wicca. How you doing, Cassie?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Welcome back to the show.
And
I'll have you speak just a little closer to the mic as well.
Is this better?
That's better, thank you. And joining us from North Dakota State University is Dr. Amber Riley. She is an Organizational Communication Associate at NDSU. How are you doing?
I'm doing well today.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also with us today is our Data and Social Analyst, Alyssa Dahl.
Hello there.
And joining us from University of Nebraska at Omaha is Dr. Adam Tima. He's Assistant Professor of Communications out there. How are you doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
Super. Well, what we want to talk about today is how the world of higher education is enhancing its relationships with students and the technology and the tools that that they use to do that. Specifically, we'll start out with a tool that's known as Blackboard. North Dakota State University is using that. Cassie or Dr. Riley, can you kind of explain what Blackboard is and how you folks are using it?
Well, I guess from as a student perspective, it is a great tool. It pretty much puts all your courses together for you and gives you tools such as being able to check your grades, being able to email all professors, select professors if there's other people in the mix with that class. Select users if I just want to email 3 students out of the 200 people in my class. They also let you put your organizations in there. For example, I'm a part of PRSSA, so the same thing goes there. It just organizes your whole educational layout. Teachers and professors, they post assignments and readings, course materials. It's really helpful. I guess, Dr. Riley, from your perspective, as a professor, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great way for us to be able to connect with students, to be able to keep postings current. So before, you used to have to put together a paper course pack at the beginning of the semester, and if anything was new in the news, particularly, you know, with organizational communication, if there's a corporate scandal we want to talk about, it was really hard to get that out to the students. So I think it's a great platform for being able to constantly update the materials that you have for students, and also for them to be able to track their grades and those things. I found it helpful in being able to manage those communications.
Dr. Tima, what technology does the University of Nebraska Omaha use?
Well, we're actually on Blackboard also. In fact, I think I'm going to be part of the beta group that's going to be looking at Blackboard 9, mm-hmm. or basically the new rollout that's coming out, or has come out, I'm not sure yet.
Has come out. We just updated to that at NDSU, I think, yep.
Yeah, we'll be taking a look at some of that, and I'll be helping out, trying to figure out the ins and outs of it. I personally enjoy using Blackboard. I think it's a good central hub, as Cassie was pointing out, for all the information. It also helps from my end, because I try and be as, you know, quote-unquote green as possible, to, as opposed to handing syllabi out in class every semester, I post all mine online. All my assignments are online, every write-up I do, and I post them as PDFs so that they can read everything as far as assignment write-ups or syllabi, things like that, right in Blackboard. I also find it's nice with the large lecture class I teach that when we have guest speakers, we shoot video, and then I can embed that video right in Blackboard as well. If you have live websites you want people to go to, it will go to those. So it's really as robust as you want to make it. So I use Blackboard. I also use Twitter in my large lecture classes, and I use that as a way to track conversations, allow people to speak that may not want to raise their hand in that 200-person, you know, lecture hall that Cassie was speaking to, and just gives us a chance to play the technology in a class that's intro to mass comm, so it's based on technology.
You use it directly while the class is going on?
Yes, we do. In the room that I've got, we've got 2 large screens behind me. I flip one to whatever we're going to be looking at for PowerPoint, what have you, And the other screen I use to have the Twitter feed rolling live behind us. So if people post things or have questions come up, it shows up right there, and then I or my teaching assistant can say, hey, you know, we've got a question on the Twitter feed. We talk about what came up, and sometimes it's really helped add to the conversation.
Is your lecture, is that also like a conference call going on so students that are not able to attend in person can ask questions that way?
That's one thing we have not done. I can't imagine the tech level that I have to go into that, because that would be kind of crazy. But I think as we start seeing the classroom experience moving more and more, you know, to satellite class, things like that, a tech environment might, a call-in session or something like that might be a possibility. I don't know how that'd be pedagogically, but, you know, tech-wise, it's possible.
What unexpected benefits has anyone seen through the implementation of this new technology that maybe you didn't think you were going to receive?
You know, I post a lot of assignments online, like assignments that I've completed in my files section, where I can have all of my assignments I've done over the past 4 years of my time at NDSU all together. And when I started using that tool, that part of Blackboard, I thought of it just as a place where I can access all my stuff online, and it's really easy to get to from any computer. And now as I'm coming up on graduation, I'm thinking this is my portfolio pretty much. You know, it really brought together, it wasn't just an easy access for me, now it's turning into a great foundation where I can now take all my stuff out and, you know, make it bright and shiny in a portfolio for when I start in the real world.
Adam, you mentioned how you're using Twitter to track conversations and enrich the conversation. I recently went to a conference in New York City where we kind of use Twitter as the same thing. And as a user, I felt it as kind of a note-taking. So it not only enriched that conversation, but now I could have all those tweets in one spot. And when I went through my conference notes, I was able to look at all those tweets to see what people would say. And a lot of people would highlight the main points of the conversation also by not only asking questions. And so I found it as a great note-taking thing. That's something I normally didn't think before about getting out of Twitter.
That's a really good idea. I think if you use, you know, hashtags as a way to organize those conversations.
Definitely.
Yeah, that'd really work slick.
Yeah, and then I think, too, you know, that's just one way to use Twitter inside the classroom or at a conference. And with social, there are these social networks and social bases, but there's multiple uses for each one. So you
sure.
could use Twitter to maybe find articles and follow top news sources, you know, to get updated information, or use it as a search engine to get the feelings of people instead of just the updated news surrounding a certain category. So I think that's one point that not a lot of people see, is there are these multiple different social networks, but they can be used for multiple reasons.
Dr. Riley or Dr. Tima, how has this technology affected learning? Has it shown progression in the grades that the students are achieving? Are they actually learning more because of this? Or are you seeing maybe it as a distraction in some cases?
Can we say both?
Yeah, that's fair. I would agree.
Maybe it depends on the person, too.
I guess the reason I say can we say both is because I love the idea of using tech in the classroom. But the moment that you say, I don't mind laptops being in here, you know, if you're going to surf on Facebook, if you're going to jump on Twitter, if you're going to be watching YouTube, be smart about it. Mm-hmm. I know you're going to do it, so just, you know, keep yourself tuned into the conversation as well. It puts a lot of onus on the student. And in that regard, you might see some students not do as well, but you're going to see some students do better. Mm-hmm. I think the jury's out. I think we need to collect data. I think we need to take a look at, okay, are grades shifting with the inclusion of technology into the classroom at the level it's been included now?
Yeah, and I think to your point, it depends oftentimes on the individual user. So sometimes I'll have students in class who I'll be talking about a topic, and they'll go ahead and Google it and find other sources on it and say, well, what about this? What about this? And then there are those, who are just, looking at their friends' Facebook pictures from the weekend or, doing things like that. And that's distracting not only to them, but to the people who are sitting around them as well. So, I like the benefits that it can have, but it's a fine line trying to police the people who would be using it in a way that's going to enhance their learning and the people who are using it in a way that may distract themselves and others. So,
yeah, as a presenter, too, I can find that distracting if I'm giving a presentation and people are engaging and looking down at their phones or the computer the whole time. I feel sometimes like they're not listening or being engaged when really they're actually being more engaged by engaging with the Twitter conversation. Mm-hmm. But then you don't know what they're all actually absorbing. Are they just hearing what those main highlights and reading the tweets, or are they listening to the full conversation and presentation that you're giving?
I think in one place that it is especially helpful, though, is probably in those larger classroom settings. So in a smaller setting where people are more likely to speak up and ask questions, I'm not sure that it necessarily aids within the classroom. I think outside the classroom it certainly helps. But in those larger classes, I know a lot of the really big lectures, particularly in the physical sciences at NDSU, use what we call PRS systems. So then you can just write in the moment, go on and say, okay, guys, how are you getting this concept? Do I need to spend 5 more minutes on it? Or can we move on? And students who might be reluctant in that, 200-person class to raise their hand and go, oh, I don't get it, can then have this more anonymous form, through the PRS or, I know there are certain websites too that let you use your cell phone to text a response in. And so I think that particularly in the large classroom, it really does help to facilitate more voices being heard than what we might not hear, or what we might hear otherwise. So
with a Blackboard, part of the greatest idea I think behind it is having all that ready information. Some professors put up their Blackboard slides. That seemed way more common back when I started college. As of right now, I don't have any that actually do it unless it's per request. Mm-hmm. But having all that information out there and your grades, being able to constantly track, let's say I printed off an assignment that you had on there, I lost it, I can quick go back on and print off that same Blackboard, readout. Having all that available, do you notice in grades how that can change? Like having all information, do kids pay attention more in class and get just as much out of it? Or do you think maybe they use that to their fullest and keep track of their grades really closely now and, look at that as a benefit themselves, or does it just distract them from actually paying attention in class as opposed to having it already online?
To your point, because you have me for class, but I don't post Blackboard slides online and largely, or post my PowerPoints online. And largely for me, it's because I know part of the engagement of learning is going to class, listening and kind of translating it into your own words and your own thoughts. And if I've put it down the way that I understand it, you're probably not going to engage as much because you've already got the notes there. So I guess that's why, with the slides on Blackboard, that I don't do it. But then to your point, more complex slides, big diagrams, things like that, I'll post because I'd rather have you pay attention to the content than trying to draw a picture in your notes. But at the same time, all the other materials, I think that's great because too often, you're having to keep everything, and to Cassie's point earlier, you've got everything then online, so if you're at your parents' house and you forgot your class binder, you can look up and go, oh, what was that assignment I was supposed to be working on? So to me, that's one of the really helpful aspects of it, that you can do that I can post samples, I can post a lot more than I would probably hand out in class for, budget purposes and green-friendly stuff.
And I lose things all the time, so it makes it nice having it all there. Yeah, it really does,
I think the nice thing about using Blackboard for grade books and for people just for that small aspect of it is that I have, if students came to my office hours, and those of us that taught realize office hours are typically no one shows up. when students come now, they have their grades already. They know where they're sitting in the class. And so you can make the conversation, I think, a stronger conversation in that visit. So it allows you to say, okay, you know you're sitting. Let's pull it up again just so you kind of know where you're at. But I find that my students who are checking Blackboard regularly, and we as professors can track that. Mm-hmm. You can see when the last time the Blackboard site was accessed. You start noticing that the students become more engaged because they start, again, going to that onus factor. It's on them now. I'm not going to hand you your syllabus. You have to download it yourself. Mm-hmm. I am not the keeper of your grades. I post them, but they're there for you. So you have access to them at all times. I think that does that may aid in the students, you know, doing better in the class. I'm not sure. The data's not there, but it's possible.
Does that, when you're tracking the students' progress through Blackboard, does that help you adjust your curriculum for that particular group? Perhaps, you know, the fall semester group of kids are performing a little different than the spring. Do you use that information to adjust the coursework throughout that teaching period?
It's one indicator, at least in my experience. I think there's several. Just watch the class, you know, but I think the tech is one additional indicator that wasn't there before. At least in my experience, it's what it is.
And to me, it gives me, to your earlier point, a source of data on people who come in and say, well, I do all the reading. And I can really easily check and see if you do all the reading. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing that it gives you a little bit more information to know, like, okay, yeah, this student really is doing the reading. They're being very diligent, and yet they're still having all these problems. And so that kind of helps me to gauge for individual students as well as for the class progress. I can talk to those things.
Now, something else I'm seeing, too, is I came across a website today. What was that called again, Lon?
Classroom
2.0, where professors and teachers can actually engage in these online forums. Mm-hmm. And are you guys a part of any of those, or do you have you heard of these, too? It's another way of social being used for professors and teachers, but outside the classroom.
So can you give me an example of like what they...
So this one was actually on social and education, okay. And professors and teachers were talking about how they were utilizing Twitter and Facebook and YouTube actually within the classroom, and it was, we looked it up, and there was about like 15 or 20 people in the Fargo area on this forum, and Adam, have you joined any of these forums or heard of any of them or anything like that?
I'm looking at 2.0 as we speak, because that's the beauty of technology.
Nice.
I have joined one or two on Facebook, and mm-hmm. they are in particular are for people that use Second Life when they teach, which is, I'm someone that does that mm-hmm. for some of my classes. I mean, so yeah, you can get some really good ideas out there. You can get some really good conversations going in here. It's basically what I'm looking at now. It looks like a Facebook, but in particular for teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, I can see how that'd be really nice, particularly for those of us that are using tech in the classroom. We can talk to others about, you know, their experiences and help those that are not savvy with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a massive learning curve, but once you've reached and made that curve, I think it works out much better for you.
Yeah, and I'm sure it is like this in the business world too, but you run into people who are interested in the new social media and are tech savvy and love it and have a passion for it and want to drive forward with it to incorporate it in the classroom. But then there are others who are more old-fashioned and still want to do the traditional kind of things. So you really have to give and take, and from a learning from a student, it really depends on what that professor's preferences are.
Well, and I think it depends. The thing that we often forget with our students is we all think, oh, they're in this generation that's going to be so tech savvy. They know how to do all these things. And I think you find a lot of variation in the comfort level of the students. And so, you know, I know people who've tried to incorporate different forms of technology, you know, like Blogger mm-hmm. and things like that into the classroom to mix success, because most of the students get comfortable with a platform like Blackboard because they all have to learn how to use that just to succeed at the university. Mm-hmm. But then when you get into, oh, well, you have to submit a blog, you need to be doing those things. You know, I think you find variation not just with the professors or faculty who might be teaching the classes, but with mm-hmm. students as well, where we assume tech savviness, where sometimes it's not there, and then it creates kind of an added anxiety there where they feel like, well, this class isn't supposed to be about me learning how to blog, it's about this. So
right.
I think that that's another area we have to think about too. It's not just comfort of faculty, it's comfort of the students as well.
Definitely.
I would agree. I think that there is, where I teach right now, we have a real strong economic class disparity that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Omaha is, I mean, if you've never looked into it, take a look. It's pretty interesting. I have students who are completely loaded down with the latest and greatest Android, you know, 2.2 mm-hmm. comes out in the next week, I think, here. So they're going to have it. They had it last week already kind of deal. And they've got three laptops, and they are crazy tech savvy as long as it's for entertainment purposes.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're passive consumers, being active contributors or producers of it, they're not that hot on. So when you explain to them that, hey, you know, you've done all this stuff already, you've shot video, you've used your phone for, you know, video and photos, and you've posted on Facebook before, you know how to do this, you have to explain to them that they can. The problem, of course, is that a lot of my students don't have any of this tech. Mm-hmm. They have never used this tech. Or if they have, their experience is limited with it. And so there is a massive digital divide, to use the term that, you know, those of us that have studying tech for a while have used. That divide exists in our classroom, and it's very real. And you have to find a way to teach about it and teach your students, you know, about the technology and find ways to ease them into it.
Has this technology affected enrollment? Do you see students coming to the universities based upon the technology that is or is not available?
I think for us at NDSU, a big part of the growth that we see has been in developing online majors. So I don't know if it's necessarily drawing people to the traditional campus, but I think where we've seen a lot of growth is people who are particularly continued education programs, so master's degrees. Having online master's degrees and those things has proven to be an attractor of students, I think. And that's a whole different ballgame. Offering a major or, you know, classes solely online is very different from just kind of straight up incorporating technology in the classroom. So I think it's something that a lot of universities are adding on to stay competitive, but also I know, like at NDSU, because we're a land-grant university to serve people in North Dakota, mm-hmm. we have a really big state, and we need to be able to serve people who are, you know, out in the small town, you know, on the western mm-hmm. side of the state as well. And so I think that it's bringing people in those ways. I don't know if it's something that attracts, you know, undergraduates to campus. I don't know, but
I guess as an undergrad, I'd never considered it. When I saw Blackboard, I was like, well, this is neat. Like, I wasn't like, wow, this is what I expected. Mm-hmm. But maybe now, you know, I'm already 4 years through. Maybe now the younger generation, those 18-year-olds, 17 sometimes coming in, maybe that is something that actually pulls them in and saying, well, what do you offer?
Well, it sounds to me that obviously technology or whatever the technology the school had that wasn't actively sold to you when you were looking for schools. Is mm-hmm. that correct?
Correct.
No. Is it something that universities should do?
I think it depends what you're looking to get out of your education. I think it'd be nice to know about. I didn't actively look for it, but I think in more populated, bigger cities, higher tech regions, it seems that the Midwest is kind of slower on catching on to some of the tech stuff, sometimes with people my age, I've noticed. But I think it would be nice to know, especially if you're going to a much larger university or a more populated region where you're going to have bigger classes, you know, the intensity is different, to know those options that are going to help you with your education, that are going to help you with that class.
I think it's important, too, to look at the student as an individual, and if that's something they're interested in, then, of course, tell them about it, and if that's going to make them their decision, then, yes, you want to share those kind of things. But if they seem intimidated by it, you know, maybe express that you have it, but not all professors use it, or it's not a big portion, but definitely I think it's a conversation worth having.
You put it on the table.
Yep.
Well, and I think something that schools are doing is advertising. Like, I know in our department we have a new major, right, that's technology and new media based.
Yes, we do.
So, you know, I think that maybe schools are addressing it in that way. So it might not be traditionally we'd think like, oh, this is a feature, mm-hmm. kind of to your point, that we can have across everyone. But, hey, we can speak to this. We can teach classes. We can educate you in this if it's a career that you want. So I think that's
definitely
maybe kind of along the same lines.
Adam, do you see when you use Twitter, do you see students, how do you see students responding to that? Do they expect that? Do they think that's, do you advertise as part of your class, and how does that work as far as how they feel about interacting with Twitter during class?
It's not something I advertise, and it's not something I require in the class either. It's completely optional. It's one of those things where if you want to use it, it's there for you. If not, don't worry.
Okay.
This year, I think I've only got about 30 or 40 of my students following the Twitter feed actively, and of that, maybe 20 of them engage in it on a daily basis. I've got a class of 175 now for that one. Last spring, I think I, out of 140 students in the class, I had 100 students following the feed, and something like 60 students regularly posting ideas on there. It turns into, it basically becomes, how do you use it? Do you use it every time the class meets? Is it just in the background, or is it more of an active part mm-hmm. of the class where you mm-hmm. say, okay, I want you to break up into groups of five, discuss the following question for the next, you know, a couple of minutes. Once you've come to an answer, start posting your ideas via Twitter so that we can all take a look at what you've got. We'll pull some off the feed and see what we come up with. So that's a way to use it. Again, I don't really advertise it that much, but I know the department as a whole, more and more of us are using some sort of tech, whether it be Facebook groups, or it be the Blackboard classroom environment, or it be Second Life, or it be Twitter, or whatever the case may be, or blogging, what have you, we're starting to use it more and more. And so I think some of our students are starting to recognize the fact that this is becoming an active part of their education. So it's not being advertised explicitly, but I think implicitly it's starting to be picked up on.
Okay.
Do you, now you guys have talked about how you've brought kind of social and communication into the classroom. Do you have students ever coming up to you with ideas or how to integrate this stuff, or maybe even presenting an assignment or in front of the class and then pulling up maybe a Facebook conversation they had or something on Twitter or something on YouTube? Do you see the students bringing social into the classroom at all?
It depends on the class for me. If it's my computer mediated communication class, I mean, we spend a third of, or even a half of that class online, literally meeting online. So whether we're meeting in Adobe Connect or meeting in Second Life or whatever the case may be. So mm-hmm. there it's very active. We're always pulling stuff in, and that's expected.
Mm-hmm.
In Introduction to Mass Comm, the large lecture class I teach,
mm-hmm.
I often get students who freak out because I am encroaching on, you know, the social media world, and I'm not supposed to be there because I'm the professor in the front of the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly when I say things, just and I demonstrate, you know, the idea of privacy. I say, really quick, here's how I can demonstrate privacy to you. Before class started, I did a sampling of 100 of you in this classroom. I looked up your Facebook profile.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them how many were open to public viewing, how many of them had pictures posted, how many of them I could figure out where they lived,
yep.
by what they posted. That creates this massive freak out.
Yeah.
Creeper.
The class, and the faces all go, ugh.
I love it.
You can't look me up on Facebook. That's private. And I say, is it?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great lesson to learn right out of the chute.
Oh, yeah. And I do it day one. Day one, I do this. I say, welcome to my class. This is how we're going to do things. You never know what you're going to expect here.
That's great.
And so they... The intro class, yeah, they would rather me never, ever walk into Facebook, never log on to Twitter, never look at their blogs. By the time they get into my public opinion classes, things like that, it's expected that we are going to be using these things because particularly in my department where we have a strong mass comm program, you should know how to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And employers more and more, too, they're doing research on fresh college graduates. They will go look at their Facebook account.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Let's turn the conversation a little bit back toward the mobile platform. Do location-based services have any future in higher education? Let's say you can use it for finding a certain building on campus. Mm-hmm. Or if a student is walking near a lecture hall, maybe there's an activity going on in that hall, you know, after school hours. Maybe it'll send a quick tweet to that phone saying, by the way, look to your left. This is going on here. Something to maybe engage the students in a little different way based upon where they happen to be at whatever particular time.
So maybe like a four-square scavenger hunt, something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm. I'll assume that everyone's got GPS on their phones.
Mm-hmm. I don't have that. I should have that, but I don't have that.
So that'd be the first thing, because if you're paying just a smartphone, that's going to give you within a mile.
Mm-hmm. I don't have much exposure to that. Alyssa, do you have?
No, I've tapped into Foursquare a little bit, and in this area it isn't as active. Not as many businesses are involved in it as like in New York City or somewhere, and so usually what you can do is you can check in somewhere and then maybe get a coupon for that place. I know in Gap stores you get a 20% off if you check in using Foursquare. So from the educational standpoint, I haven't seen schools use it, but I think it would be something really cool to incorporate into the future, maybe, you know, a couple years down the road or something. It could be something very beneficial and edge-cutting for that university to be able, if you're walking by a dining center and there's an ice cream social there that day, to announce that. I mean, you could attract a lot more people that maybe not necessarily were aware of it before.
And I would like that because I know I don't poke around our website too much, usually. But I know we get a lot of great guest speakers at NDSU and like just little side events that aren't even a whole evening, just a couple hours. And I would love to know those things. Mm-hmm. And if it was presented to me in that fashion where if, a, you know, next Memorial Union, it says here tonight, 7 p.m., so-and-so is here, that would be really helpful to me because I love taking part in that kind of stuff. But the way the information is presented isn't always convenient for me in my scattermind. You know?
Well, and I think the way the information is disseminated now, at least at NDSU, is really inefficient. I mean, we have these massive lists of emails that go out. You get like 20 of them a day. And you get all the stuff that's not relevant to you. At a certain point, you stop reading it. But I know that, you know, the university wants to try to find ways to keep our students more engaged on campus so they don't engage in risky behaviors and things like that. But a lot of that is just making sure the students know in a way that they're going to remember that's accessible to them about events that are going on because it's a lot to keep track of.
What student doesn't have their phone on them when they're walking across campus in their hand.
And I know Concordia College in Moorhead actually has a text campaign available for emergency alerts. So if there's a blizzard and some and the whole school is canceled for the day or shut down, you'll get an emergency alert text message. Or if something else is going on that's a highly red alert emergency, students who have subscribed to this text will get these text messages right to their phone. And I've found it when I was going to school that as a great benefit. Then you wouldn't have to wake up and go to class during a blizzard when it was canceled. So
that's
one thing I noticed that UNO, the Rasko Omaha where I teach, has been doing is that they have 2D scan bar scavenger hunts. So they have those little 2D symbols all over campus.
Are they the JAG tags, those square ones?
You got it, yep.
Okay.
And then what they do is they go, and I mean, you don't need to have a smart, or you have to phone with a camera and a web browser, and so you don't need a, you know, GPS on it. But if you let people know, hey, follow these scan tags around campus, you know, you can turn it into something, you can turn it into an educational system. You can say, hey, when you see this, scan it for information about what's going on this week or this evening. And so it may not be location-based, but you can use something like that even to get people to engage, you know, the campus life.
Yep.
Perhaps not the classroom, but the campus life in a new way.
Definitely.
You could do that with QR codes, too, I would think, with your cell phone if you have a system that reads QR codes on your phone, if you have a smartphone.
Sure.
Okay. Folks, we're running out of time. I have one more question for you. Obviously, this technology does not come cheap. The university has to pay for it, and in turn, they will charge the students for it to help pay for it. What is everyone's opinion about using platforms such as Blackboard as an ad platform, as a revenue generator for the school?
That's a big question.
If it could be targeted, I think, like Facebook ads are targeted to the user, I think that would be something that, you know, could even be found beneficial if you could actually have an ad targeted towards that class for more information in that area. I think that could be something that could the students could find useful or the professors could find useful. But if they're just ads, you know, not targeted, I don't think that would be very useful. And just a lot of people would see that as a money-hungry event and wouldn't support it.
Obviously, you would have a very targeted audience. You know, if a university decided to go sell it, I mean, the ROI would be through the roof.
I guess when I think about that, I start thinking of, are you a Pepsi or a Coke campus? And then I start thinking about, there's a massive conversation in the educational literature about how much corporate influence on an academic environment is too much corporate influence. So it would. Are we moving that route? I don't know. I think that it's going to be, I think it's going to end up on the table more and more. I personally would like to see it never happen, but that's me being the idealist, you know, college professor. I don't know. I mean, could they make money for certain? I honestly have no idea.
Well, I mean, I do think, though, that as you see particularly public institutions and states be increasingly strapped for money, that, you know, whether we have an opinion about it right now, we're going to have to start to think about these issues because, you know, I think that universities are going to maintain the standards that we think are important to educate the students. You know, many universities are going to have to start exploring different ways to make revenue. And so I think, I don't know right now what my thought on it is, but I think, wow, I probably better start thinking about it because I think it is going to be an issue for us in higher education.
As a student, I can see it being not interfering, but a little, not annoying, but when you're always exposed to ads, I guess, you know, you're used to it. But maybe if we were selling those, if a percentage, if 5%, 10% of those sales went to scholarships or something in that nature, you know, education scholarships, not sports funded scholarships, that was something I personally would appreciate as a student that applies for these things all the time, you know.
I was going to say it goes back to that idea of making sure it's as targeted as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do think it's one thing, though, that people are exposed to using outside. You know, so we've talked a lot about Blackboard as being kind of the university-sanctioned thing, but I think, you know, we have to remember people are using other platforms as well, that they're probably getting that same kind of advertising exposure.
Definitely.
So, you know, it probably is already an issue that some students are facing, but as far as the university kind of sanctioned and paid for platforms go, I don't know.
Very good. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
great
Mom.
Discussion
Thank
today, Dr. Riley. Dr. Tima, thanks for joining us today. Cassie, Alyssa, glad to have you back here. If anyone listening has any questions for any of the panelists here on the show, you can send an email to thepodcast@sundog.net. I'm Lon Keller. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time on Sundog, the podcast.